but no one had figured out a way to measure this. It occurred to Michelson that for half the year the Earth is traveling toward the Sun, and for half the year it is moving away from it. And he reasoned that if you took careful enough measurements at opposite seasons and compared light's travel time between the two, you would have your answer. Michelson talked Alexander Graham Bell, newly enriched inventor of the telephone, into providing the funds to build an ingenious and sensitive instrument of Michelson's own devising called an interferometer, which could measure the velocity of light with great precision. Then, assisted by the genial but shadowy Morley, Michelson embarked on years of fastidious measurements. The work was delicate and exhausting and had to be suspended for a time to permit Michelson a brief but comprehensive nervous breakdown, but by 1887 they had their results. They were not at all what the two scientists had expected to find. As Caltech astrophysicist Kip S. Thorne has written, the speed of light turned out to be the same in all directions and at all seasons. It was the first hint in 200 years, in exactly 200 years, in fact, that Newton's laws might not apply all the time everywhere. The Michelson-Morley outcome became, in the words of William H. Cropper, probably the most famous negative result in the history of physics. Michelson was awarded a Nobel Prize in Physics for the work, the first American so honored, but not for 20 years. Meanwhile, the Michelson-Morley experiments would hover unpleasantly like a musty smell in the background of scientific thought. Remarkably, and despite his findings, when the 20th century dawned, Michelson counted himself among those who believed that the work of science was nearly at an end, with only a few turrets and pinnacles to be added, a few roof bosses to be carved, in the words of a writer in Nature. In fact, of course, the world was about to enter a century of science where many people wouldn't understand anything and none would understand everything. Scientists would soon find themselves adrift in a bewildering realm of particles and antiparticles, where things pop in and out of existence in spans of time that make nanoseconds look plodding and uneventful, where everything is strange. Science was moving from a world of macrophysics, where objects could be seen and held and measured, to one of microphysics, where events transpire with unimaginable swiftness on scales far below the limits of imagining. We were about to enter the quantum age, and the first person to push on the door was the so far unfortunate Max Planck. In 1900, now a theoretical physicist at the University of Berlin, and at the somewhat advanced age of 42, Planck unveiled a new quantum theory, which posited that energy is not a continuous thing like flowing water, but comes in individualized packets, which he called quanta. This was a novel concept, and a good one. In the short term, it would help to provide a solution to the puzzle of the Michelson-Morley experiments in that it demonstrated that light needn't be a wave after all. In the longer term, it would lay the foundation for the whole of modern physics. It was, at all events, the first clue that the world was about to change. But the landmark event, the dawn of a new age, came in 1905, when there appeared in the German physics journal Annalen der Physik, a series of papers by a young Swiss bureaucrat who had no university affiliation, no access to a laboratory, and the regular use of no library greater than that of the National Patent Office in Bern, where he was employed as a technical examiner third class. An application to be promoted to technical examiner second class had recently been rejected. His name was Albert Einstein. And in that one eventful year, he submitted to Annalen der Physik 5 papers, of which 3, according to C.P. Snow, were among the greatest in the history of physics. One examining the photoelectric effect by means of Planck's new quantum theory, one on the behavior of small particles in suspension, what is known as Brownian motion, and one outlining a special theory of relativity. The first won its author a Nobel Prize and explained the nature of light and also helped make television possible, among other things. Einstein was honored somewhat vaguely for services to theoretical physics. He had to wait 19 years, till 1921, to receive the award, quite a long time, all things considered, but nothing at all compared with Friedrich Rheines, who detected the neutrino in 1957 but wasn't honored with a Nobel until 1995, 38 years later, or the German Ernst Ruska, who invented the electron microscope in 1932 and received his Nobel Prize in 1986, more than half a century after the fact. Since Nobel Prizes are never awarded posthumously, longevity can be as important a factor as ingenuity for prize winners. The second paper provided proof that atoms do indeed exist, a fact that had, surprisingly, been in some dispute. The third merely changed the world. Einstein was born in Ulm, in southern Germany, in 1879, but grew up in Munich. Little in his early life suggested the greatness to come. Famously, he didn't learn to speak until he was three. In the 1890s, his father's electrical business failing, the family moved to Milan. But Albert, by now a teenager, went to Switzerland to continue his education, though he failed his college entrance exams on the first try. In 1896, he gave up his German citizenship to avoid military conscription and entered the Zurich Polytechnic Institute on a four-year course designed to churn out high school science teachers. He was a bright but not outstanding student. In 1900, he graduated, and within a few months was beginning to contribute papers to Annalen der Physik. His very first paper on the physics of fluids in drinking straws, of all things, appeared in the same issue as Planck's quantum theory. From 1902 to 1904, he produced a series of papers on statistical mechanics, only to discover that the quietly productive J. Willard Gibbs in Connecticut had done that work as well in his Elementary Principles of Statistical Mechanics of 1901. At the same time, he had fallen in love with a fellow student, a Hungarian named Mileva Maric. In 1901, they had a child out of wedlock, a daughter who was discreetly put up for adoption. Einstein never saw his child. 2 years later, he and Maric were married. In between these events in 1902, Einstein took a job with the Swiss Patent Office, where he stayed for the next 7 years. He enjoyed the work. It was challenging enough to engage his mind, but not so challenging as to distract him from his physics. This was the background against which he produced the Special Theory of Relativity in 1905. Called On the Electrodynamics of Moving Bodies, it is one of the most extraordinary scientific papers ever published, as much for how it was presented as for what it said. It had no footnotes or citations, contained almost